Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Friday, March 1st, 2019. I am your host, Kelly Gamott. With me today, I have two fantastic guests, and we are going to have a discussion of some very interesting subjects. With me today, I have Charlotte Henry. Hi, Charlotte.
Hi.
Apparently, introductions are entertaining today. Also with me, I have John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Hi, Kelly.
I'm really glad to have you all, you both here today, because our first topic is something very interesting to both of you, and that is Apple Watch. And Charlotte, you wrote a piece this morning.
Yeah, yesterday, actually.
Or yesterday.
We did it on late Thursday for me. Basically, we had a company called Strategy Analytics picked out the numbers, particularly of Apple Watches, which remains the biggest in the smartwatch space, but also of the other companies. Mm-hmm. So as I say, Apple remains top of the track, but there is getting some competition from Samsung. There were two things that I thought were significant from these numbers. The first was that the shipments of Apple Watch went up 18% in the fourth quarter of 2018. Okay. Which is interesting, but overall it actually lost its market, part of its market share. It lost 16% of its market share in the quarter, despite an 18% rise.
Okay.
Which is kind of interesting, and I know John wants to drill into that in a little bit. Just to kind of give the whole picture, in total, Apple shipped 22.5 million Apple Watches in 2018, 9.2 million of them in Q4 2018.
That's a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot. These are serious numbers, and what's clearly happened, that Apple is on the verge. I don't think it's quite there yet, but it's pushing the point, in my opinion. I'd be interested to hear what you two think of this, that it kind of got to with the iPod, where if people are getting a smartwatch, they're getting an Apple Watch, in the same way that if other MP3 players existed when the iPod was there. But really, when you bought a MP3 player, you bought an iPod.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're kind of approaching that with the Apple Watch. I don't know what you guys think of that.
Well, I think it's pretty close to that, but I also think it's slightly more like the iPad,
that's probably fair.
Only in that it wasn't a real common crowded market before we got the Apple Watch. There weren't a whole lot of other ones. And then, so Apple sort of created that market as well as owning it at the same time. And then, And then other people got into that same game. And so now there's a little bit more option. And I think that's part of where, when people talk about the numbers going down, that's part of where that comes from, is just that the market is bigger. Like, it's not necessarily zero sum if the appeal of Apple Watch is bringing more people to it, and maybe they're just not people who are firmly invested in the iOS ecosystem, or they're Android people, so they make a different choice, or they decide that they want something that's a little less Apple Watch, like Apple centric, and so they get something else and look at it that way. And if you sort of slice it as, you know, wearables like a Fitbit, for example, you know, that will also tell you the time and show you your text message because it's connected by Bluetooth to your phone, then you end up with, you know, a whole other group of people who are also sort of part of that same market because they're doing something with their watch. And I think that's kind of interesting.
What is it also interesting? Sorry, John, just to jump in, just to complete the picture of the Apple Watch market. Mm-hmm. As I said, Samsung was second, and you've just mentioned Fitbit. They also, I think, increased their presence, but Samsung actually overtook Fitbit to get into second place, which I thought was kind of interesting.
It is. John?
I think Apple made a big splash with the Series 4. It seems to me like it was an inflection point. The electrocardiogram made a big splash. When Apple rolled out the Apple Watch, it was the star of the show. It kind of took everybody unexpectedly by storm. The infograph display combined with the awareness of the health monitoring and the EKG, ECG just exploded onto the scene. And I think that helps explain why it was so popular during quarter four.
Mm-hmm.
the other thing is that's happening is that these are estimates from Strategy Analytics, but they're based on market analysis, and I think they're pretty good. Apple has never released the numbers, and they don't release unit sales now for anything, but long ago, Apple wasn't releasing sales numbers at all for the Apple Watch because they knew that it was going to do well in the long run, but people were going to be critical of the sales in the early days. Mm-hmm. And it takes a while for a product like this to build momentum, people to bring awareness of it. And each evolution, each version of the Apple Watch has been more and more compelling to people. I can't imagine living without my Apple Watch.
Now, John, are you on Series 4?
For me. I'm on Series 4.
Okay.
And I'm loving it. Yeah.
Now, I feel like the Series 4 is really sort of the second big evolution for the watch. So when you talked about the inflection point, like I saw a lot of that in sort of the day-to-day usefulness of this, like the fall detection. You know, whenever we've talked about watch before, particularly even here, like I've told the story about how suddenly like everyone in my Twitter timeline when we got the Series 4 last year was basically like, well, more than half of the people that I follow regularly were like, my insert family member here is totally getting one of these for Christmas because of the fall detection. And, you know, when you add that to the ECG that you can do on the fly, and you add that to the screen reoptimization that we got, you know, the faces did go up 2 millimeters in size, but like I went from an original issue Apple Watch to the Series 4, and to me, it feels like acres of new space, and it's really only a 2 millimeter difference.
So much faster, too.
And
minutes.
Faster, and battery, and update, yeah.
Instead of eons. Yeah.
Yeah, because you did the same upgrade, I think.
Yeah, I can wear it overnight if I want to. I can wear it to bed to track my pulse. And then when I put it on the charger, it's all fully charged by the time I'm out of the shower.
Yep. Yeah, I've used mine for sleep tracking, and it's the same sort of thing. And I have found, like, I feel like this was really the big evolution. I know there were a number of iterations between, like, the original watch and the latest one. But I feel like even between 3 and 4, there's enough of a jump that if you are a person who was looking to upgrade, I would say, like, yeah, if you have a 3, then, you know, a 4 might be a thing to consider. I have been interested mostly because whenever we want to talk about Apple Watch and sales numbers and market share and all that kind of stuff, it's all sort of theoretical because Apple has never told us how many they sold. This was the first wave of Apple not giving numbers to anybody, is that the only time we ever get an exact number from Apple is if they were to announce it. You know, like we used to occasionally get iPhone press releases. We sold 4 million iPhones over the weekend, things like that.
Yeah, or 100 million Mac users to date.
Right. So we don't know those numbers unless Apple gives us those numbers. And I don't remember that we've ever really gotten that for the watch.
No, never.
But I do agree with John that these numbers seem pretty robust from Strategy Analytics. I think they're clearly in the right ballpark. I've been a Fitbit user. Very like early versions of Fitbit I've used. Compared to instead of an Apple Watch, and it's interesting to see how one, because I kind of like traditional watches in some ways. I know we have experts on the TMO team who love their watches.
Oh yes,
but it's interesting. If I was going to go for a full smartwatch, I have to say I think I probably would only go for an Apple Watch now. Mm-hmm. I think.
It has to pair with an iPhone, so you would have to switch to an iPhone too, sure.
Well, indeed. Which
that too.
Would be fine with us. I mean,
I know. I can jump straight into that walled garden.
We're happy to. We are more than happy to help you ease that transition.
Yeah, yeah. I'll jump across the walled garden. But I think that, look, I've seen the Samsung smartwatches as well, and they're pretty good. I think it's a typical thing, though, where the design... I know that the tech specs probably... Would it be fair to say there's not huge amounts in them? Apple's probably a little bit more advanced, but, you know, the new Fitbits do quite a lot of what you want. The Samsung watches are making a pretty decent effort on the tech side, but for me, it's the design that means the Apple Watch wins.
Uh-huh.
it is a significantly better looking product than any of the others I've seen, I think, in my opinion, for in the same price brackets, at least anyway.
Yes.
And I think that's probably what's keeping it ahead.
I want to ask you guys about dumb watches, because yesterday in my ponderings, I talked about walking through the mall and looking at the department store jewelry department. And they have acres and acres of brightly lit glass cases of dumb watches.
Yep.
You know, all these foreign Swiss and Seikos and Timexes and other brands and bright rings. Yes. And they just sit there glittering in the bright halogen lights. And there's nobody buying them.
Nope.
And they're so dumb. And the batteries last for years because they don't do anything.
Okay, but here's the thing that's always also put... Well, this is the thing that's always put me off buying smartwatches as well. Kind of... If you buy an Apple Watch, they kind of look like everyone else's Apple Watch, right? Watches are quite a unique thing. They're a piece of jewelry, as I see it. Maybe that's a more female approach to a watch. I don't know. But they're a piece of jewelry. And so, actually, having this, I don't particularly want to be wearing the same watch as everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I love the design of the Apple Watch, and the functionality is obviously fantastic, but I think there is an element with smartwatches where you don't actually want to be wearing the same jewelry as everyone else, and actually it's rather nice with, as John calls them, dumb watches, mm-hmm. that you can pick different makes, different models. The likelihood of you ever bumping into someone wearing the same watch as you is relatively rare.
That's a completely alien idea to me. I think of it as a miniature tricorder. It's just a technical instrument.
It's the most John Arthur I've ever heard.
Yes.
Obviously, John thinks of his watch as a tricorder.
Of course. Now, I would only revise your assessment, Charlotte, to say that it's an accessory.
Right, exactly.
Because it's like a belt or a pair of shoes or something like that. Absolutely. that you would add to part of your outfit. Because there are people who take that very seriously, and the people who do take that seriously are generally swapping out the bands on those. And that's where I find people differentiate Apple Watches is with the band.
I think we've seen it, and both Andrew and myself have picked up on a few of them over recent months on TMO. There are some really nice bands coming out for the Apple Watch.
Mm-hmm.
But still, the face, the central feature is the same.
Yes.
It's one of the things that's put me off anyway. As much as I think it would, I think I would have a real use for it.
Oh, yes.
I think I would really enjoy using it. I think it would, as John says, you know, benefit me quite significantly. But that is one of the things that puts me off. The other thing that puts me off, and I'd be interested in both your experience of this, is the effect it has on battery life to your phone.
None.
What? Say what?
Like
zero.
Yeah, I have not noticed any.
That's interesting because particularly the ones that are linked with Bluetooth.
Uh-huh. It's connected all the time and it doesn't.
Are clearly draining. So for example, I know my
battery list.
So for example, I know my Fitbit definitely drained phone battery life.
Yes. I have not noticed a difference. And even the old one, between the two, I have not noticed a difference, and I have gone days without my watch, and I have not noticed that my phone battery performance is significantly better as a result. It's the same, because I don't think they're communicating as noisily as sometimes some of the other stuff has to. And so it doesn't seem to be a big deal there.
Because certainly devices like Fitbit definitely do drain battery life.
Yes. And I'm not seeing it with my watch. So that's a bonus. That's another bonus to it.
So. Definitely.
Yeah. So we will talk more about Apple Watch in the future. It's entirely possible we will have some picks for you or some tips on stuff that we use, because we will have to do at least a couple of those shows once Charlotte gets one, so that we can help her make sure that she's having the best watch experience she can have.
We're gonna have a GoFundMe for my Apple Watch.
And as soon as you do, we will talk about it. In the meantime, I want to tell you about our sponsors. Our first sponsor today is ExpressVPN. As you know, if you listen to our show, it's not hard to worry about where your data actually goes, because a whole lot of the time we spend telling you about data breaches and flaws in security that are causing other people who should not necessarily have your information to totally have your information. And one of the ways that you can help keep that from happening is to use a VPN service. We're recommending here this week our sponsor, ExpressVPN. And ExpressVPN has easy to use apps. They run seamlessly in the background on your computer, on your iPhone, on your iPad. It's one click and you're totally protected. And the way that you're protected is because your internet browsing is anonymized because all that data is encrypted and ExpressVPN is hiding your IP address. You can protect yourself with ExpressVPN for less than $7 a month. And because you listen to this show, you get 3 months free with a 1-year package. And so the way you get that is by going to expressvpn.com/TDO. That's expressvpn.com/TDO. And you get 3 months free with a 1-year package. Now, our other sponsor today is the Ridge Wallet. And the Ridge is a minimalist front pocket wallet that helps you up your everyday carry game. So it was launched by a father-son team on Kickstarter in 2013. And the Ridge is now in the front pockets of over 250,000 people. So the RFID blocking wallet is made of two metal plates, and they're either titanium or carbon fiber or aluminum. They come in a bunch of different colors, and they're bound together by a durable band. And this wallet is slim and lifetime guaranteed. So it comes in three different metals. It comes in a load of different colors and styles. It will help you carry less, but you will always have what you need. And you can get 10% off with free worldwide shipping if you go to ridgewallet.com/observer. That's RIDGEWALLET.com/OBSERVER. And if you go there, you will get 10% off your wallet and get free worldwide shipping. Now, our second topic today is an interesting thing that came up that John was thinking about, and that is Apple becoming a financial services company.
Yeah, I saw an article yesterday by Robert Cringely, and he talked about how it was one of his predictions for 2019, Apple would move towards becoming a financial company in the style of Jack Welch and General Electric. When Jack Welch came into General Electric in the 80s, the company was flush with cash, and he turned General Electric, as we know, into a credit and finance giant. Mm-hmm. And they used their big wad of cash to make more money. That's what big companies do. When you're sitting on a lot of money, you use that money to make more money.
Yes.
And Bob Cringely pointed out that Apple hasn't really been leveraging that. Mm-hmm. They're moving over to a zero balance in a situation where their debt equals their assets. But that doesn't mean that their assets have to just sit there and offset their debt. Mm-hmm. The assets should be put to work. And so Bob talked about how we've seen a steady evolution of Apple moving towards financial services with Apple Pay, then Apple Pay Cash, direct financing of phones in China. Mm-hmm. Now this deal with Goldman Sachs on credit cards. And it's an obvious thing to do because not only does Apple have a lot of cash to leverage off of, but they're a company that's known for protecting your privacy. Mm-hmm. And we trust Apple. And so if we're ever going to trust a company like a major bank with our money, we should be trusting Apple as well. And we do. So it makes perfect sense for Apple to leverage all that money and to grow that part of its business. It's an easy thing to do. And Apple hasn't really, they've been slowly easing into it, but they haven't really been particularly known for being a financial services company, which they'll probably do. Now, there's downsides and good sides to that, which we can talk about, too.
Well, I think the point is Apple hasn't been particularly known for being a services company until that recently. Obviously,
that's true.
Right, exactly. And we know that is what they want to change.
Mm-hmm.
So, John, I mean, John's entirely right. It makes complete sense for them to move into financial services. Andrew did a really good piece that I would encourage listeners to check out about. He linked to why Goldman and Apple is quite a good match. And there are lots of reasons why that's true. And we talked about it when that credit card was announced, that they're looking to expand their revenue streams, Goldman Sachs wants to get a younger crowd, crowd that's also, you know, quite affluent involved. So it makes a lot of sense from everyone's perspective. Apple Pay is hugely, hugely popular. It's a fantastic service. I see, I see people, for example, in London, I'm seeing less and less and less people using what we call Oyster cards, which is the kind of tap in, tap out card you can buy from Transport for London, or their own debit card, which we've also discussed here. But more and more and more people are using Apple Pay to travel around London. This is a service that is people are happy to put all their financial information into. So it makes total sense for Apple to expand into other services, financial services. Now, I don't think we're going to be getting the Apple Mortgage Company anytime soon, or Apple Loans.
No.
Although, of course, as John points out, they are financing, there's a finance deal in China.
Right.
But I do, listen, our phones are our wallets in a lot of ways now, aren't they?
Yes. And I think
so it's together.
Yeah,
it makes total sense.
And I think in no small part, I think that there was any uptake in Apple Pay at all initially when we first heard about it. Like, look at this thing where all you have to do is pull out your phone and bonk it on the thing, and now you've bought stuff. Like, I remember seeing that demo, and you know, and I remember feeling like there was going to be a lot of resistance to that. And then Apple explained how it worked. And I think the fact that Apple was never secret about their security, which sounds odd, but they always talked about, like, if you're using iMessage, your messages are end-to-end encrypted. You know, the only person that can see the other one is the person on the other side of the message. And this is what we know about your data, and this is what we know about your purchases and all of that stuff. And they made it very clear when they announced Apple Pay and showed it to us the very first time that this is what, like, we don't know and we don't want to know what you bought, when you bought it. We don't care about any of that. They get their fraction of a percent or fraction of a penny of the transaction, and that was the only part they really wanted. And I actually wrote an article about breach fatigue and how Apple Pay helps solve that. And the part of the way that they solve that is because you're not carrying around your actual credit card number on your phone all the time. And being able to think through that transaction effectively and making it easier for me to trust Apple with my information, I think, is part of where Apple Pay's success came from. And that's part of what made Apple Pay Cash, such an easy thing for them to do, because people were already familiar with Apple Pay and how it worked. And now, instead of just using it at the store or at that food cart, I can use it to pay John for something. And that seemed, you know, it definitely seems like a very easy thing to do. And for people who don't remember GE as a financial services company, the thing that you may only sort of remember, or might be foggy, is that once GE realized that they had all this money and they wanted to do something with it, they bought NBC. So GE owned NBC for quite a long time before all of the deals that went on that now made it a Comcast company, which we all know, you know, it's really the Shinehart Wig company that owns all of that. I think it's going to be interesting to see how this shapes up as far as strictly the services piece of it, let alone even the financial services piece of it, because I, like Charlotte said, I mean, what reputation Apple had as a services company prior to the last year, possibly two, is really not great. And that's me being exceptionally charitable in describing them as a services company
The only services company people really associated with, if you want to refer to it as a service, is iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
And you were still kind of buying something, a product, even though it wasn't a physical thing anyway.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like it wasn't providing a service in the way we're really talking about.
Right. And like other stuff that they have done, you know, wasn't great. Like, you know, the .Mac stuff and the iTools suite and
but
you know,
on the positive side, Apple's put a lot of technology into place to protect those 500 million credit card numbers in their accounts,
right,
and
yeah.
Apple ID.
Right. And all of that infrastructure.
Off of that.
Yeah. Once you've built that system, then it's easy to, you know, they did all of that for Apple Pay, which is what makes Apple Pay Cash possible. And so now what's going to be the next thing that they're going to do with it. So,
and we're seeing the other point to make, which I think is easy to overlook, is the number of countries we are seeing Apple Pay move into.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just a service that's popular, say, in the US or the US and the UK and Australia. This is a worldwide service, and week in, week out, we're reporting on, you know, month in, month out, let's say, we are reporting on new countries and new institutions that it is linking with.
Mm-hmm.
Charlotte, Apple seems to have been particularly successful with Apple Pay in the UK, even more so than in the United States, as in my views. So
yeah, it's hugely popular.
What do you attribute that to?
Well, so Kelly and I have discussed this before, actually, and it's really interesting. There is a huge amount. We're very used to contactless technology in the UK. All like debit cards now, any purchase under £30 sterling can be done on contactless. I very rarely, you know, when I'm in a supermarket or something, see people actually punch in a chip. People are just touching pins now. As I said, in London, where I live, the tube network is all done contactlessly. So I think people were already used to contactless.
Is there some government initiative or regulations or promotion that kind of triggered that?
I don't think so. We were just kind of, people were just very happy to get involved, and the banks all started issuing cards with the relevant chip in it so that it worked. Yeah. And it's been going, like, I was shocked when you were explaining how uncommon it was in the US in some places, that kind of chip and, you know, tap and go technology. And so I think because people were used to it with a card, it wasn't a huge leap to do it on their phone.
Okay. Right. And that was the hurdle we had here, was that there wasn't a whole lot of contactless payment in any form before Apple Pay in the US.
Right. So, exactly.
Yeah. So that was part of the resistance here. Yeah. Anyway, you know, where there people are already used to, I tap the thing on the thing and now I've bought stuff. Like, instead of having to get out a card, it's just my phone, which was already in my hand anyway because I was texting somebody in line. Now I bonk and now, like, my groceries are paid and I'm going home.
Exactly.
So what would be the next step for Apple? You talked about how you don't think you're going to mortgage your house with Apple anytime soon, but it's got to grow and it's got to flesh out. So what's next beyond Goldman Sachs credit card?
Well, I think the success of the Goldman Sachs credit card operation will be critical to the answer. I think if people get
Where do you think Apple would like to go?
Well, I guess it would like to expand that credit card offering. Would it link with other institutions? Would it expand what that credit card can do? Will it find a way of offering? I mean, maybe it will offer some kind of loan. That does seem a step too far for me to offer, say, a loan via Apple. I can't quite get my head around that. But maybe we'll see different ways of financing its products, given that we know one of the things that is troubling Apple at the moment, and we've discussed on this show and on the site, the comments of the COO at Apple, aware of pricing issues. Maybe we'll see them trying to bring in some financing deals for their products to help make them more affordable for people. Maybe that would be one of the ways it goes.
Venture capitalism for AI?
Could get into
I'm just throwing stuff at the wall here.
I mean, Apple can invest and buy whatever companies it wants at the moment, can't it?
Yeah, VC is a kind of an interesting avenue to take with that, I think, in whatever form that would take. That seems, you know, as opposed to buying something outright, dropping some money into it and seeing how it turns out, like, seems like it might be a more interesting idea for Apple. But I don't know.
I would imagine, actually, that Apple would prefer to have the control over something, but that's just me.
Yeah.
Have the whole thing and control what it looks like and how it works and what it... Yeah, that would be my take. But so I think it will be more in the kind of financing of products and credit and that kind of thing that we'll see. I mean, one thing it could do is it could, this has literally just come to mind, it could try and make a competitor to something like Square.
Yeah.
That I could see.
Yeah, now that they've made it so that I can pay, you know, also owning the terminal where I pay, you know, the other half of that transaction seems like that might be a good way to get into.
Wouldn't that be cool? Take over the point of sale hardware business.
I mean, I can see that being a more viable solution than many of the other things that you could moot.
Oh, absolutely. Definitely. I think we will have to wait and see what Apple does. And as soon as we know...
Yeah, no, I do think a lot will depend on the success of this project with Goldman.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is gonna, this is where we're gonna find out if how hard they're gonna bet on more financial services going forward. So, if they do, and however it works, you will hear more about it here. I want to thank both of you for being with me today. Thank you so much for coming by, Charlotte.
Thanks very much. Have a great weekend.
And you too. And also, I would like to give good weekend wishes to John Martellaro.
Oh, thank you. It was nice to be here.
Yeah, I'm glad you were able to come by. And I've been your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you on Monday. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.